greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Kevin and Andrew, and this is the Jayhawk Talk Podcast Championship Edition. Andrew, how you feeling after that huge game last night?
Kevin, I feel like a champion. I feel like a winner. I think that this team has had its ups and downs. It's seen some home losses. Seen a Sprint Center loss to Washington. Seen a home loss to Arizona State. Seen a couple weird ones to Texas Tech and Oklahoma State at home. But they managed to find a way to make themselves through this Big 12 season and emerged victorious. A lot of things to give credit to, but I think the one man we can talk about, and we can talk about in this podcast, is Devontae Graham. Devontae Graham had his kind of national coming out party. I mean, everybody knows who he is, but it really began the conversation of, you know, this Devontae Graham guy, maybe he should be considered for all these awards. All these other guys are fading or on losing teams, but this guy's a winner.
He is a winner, Andrew, and I think this is obviously his moment. This is the reason he came back to the Jayhawks instead of testing the waters. I think Self even said in the post game, he never even considered it. Like, his mom called Self and said, yeah, he doesn't even want to try. Like, he wants to come back. He wants to be the man for a year. And obviously he's gotten to be the man. And it has been awesome to watch. Probably underrated season, I think, overall. If you start looking at the numbers in terms of his assist numbers and his points and obviously all the other stuff that he does, I think probably underrated compared to others. I think Trae Young has a lot to do with that, being in the same conference. But, man, he's been awesome.
And I think that's right. He certainly didn't have a perfect season. I mean, there was some times here in the Big 12 season where maybe he had 17 points, but, you know, he went 5 for 20 to get that. There was a couple of stat lines that looked like that. But yeah, if you look at it in the whole, especially recently, and especially in the big games, you see a high percentage where if you just take a couple things. The eye test, he looks like the best player on the floor. He's making everything. He's making plays. He's getting assists all over the floor. But if you look at it from the stat perspective, I mean, he's averaging 7 assists a game, 19 points a game. That's absolutely incredible. I mean, that's near Frank Mason level last year. Frank was a little higher. Frank did some different things, but Devontae, not far off. This Trae Young thing is just an inaccurate and incomparable comparison, just because they play so much differently down there in Norman, and they don't win games doing it. So this Devontae guy, I want him on my team. What about you?
Absolutely. I mean, he's been awesome. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more later. We're going to run through a few things here. Obviously, we're going to talk about that Texas Tech game. We'll preview the next couple games, do some Big 12 talk. We are going to get into the whole FBI thing, because that's apparently a thing. We talked about that a little bit before, and now we have a little bit more information. Then we're going to get into the bracket. Let's talk postseason and Big 12 awards too. So let's lead off with the Texas Tech game. We've already started talking about it, so let's go there. Andrew, let me take you back to January 3rd. So we're going backwards, and we go back, and we're in Allen Fieldhouse. It's warm. It's lovely. People are cheering, except for the fact that Kansas gets romped by Texas Tech at home. January 3rd. Andrew, as you know,
I was in the Denver airport. I hated every second of it.
That does suck. As you know, Kansas under Bill Self has never been swept by a team in a round robin. Never lost twice on home or away. This was a test. Obviously, we got another one coming up with Oklahoma State and Texas Tech both beating us at home, and we were not favored in this game down in Lubbock. Game day was in Lubbock. They're ranked number 6. This is the biggest game they've probably ever had in Lubbock. And Texas Tech never led. Kansas controlled the game, as you said. This was a game you and I talked about on this podcast last week at this very time. And what did we both say? We both said Kansas is going to win this game. And it just felt it. And usually, I know you always say Kansas is going to win the game. But
and I'm usually right.
Usually right. That's a, hey, listen, I get it. My takeaway was this just felt like a game that Bill Self just wins. Like his teams just win. And Texas Tech had never been in this situation before. And Kansas obviously has. It just, it, you know, it just felt like a game we were going to win. And then we won.
Yeah, we definitely figured it out. And, you know, it's this team's grown a lot since January 3rd. This team's figured out how to score in different ways. They're not just a three-point reliant team. We're getting a little bit more on the inside. That being said, we still shoot a lot of three-pointers. We rely on Doak a little bit more, and we drive a lot more. I think we cleaned some things up defensively, put in a 2-3 zone that we throw in here occasionally.
Crappy 2-3 zone.
A crappy 2-3 zone. So do some different things. Get this team to play to its strengths, you know, minimize its weaknesses, and we get there. So you want to get into this game a little bit? I mean, obviously, we can get into the details, but you know, a couple things on the Texas Tech side. Keenan Evans, obviously, is struggling with some turf toe. So it's not you were right. It's turf toe, which sounds bad, but apparently turf toe is a pretty gruesome, agonizing injury. Yeah. Keenan Evans did not have a great game, but a couple other guys, you know, especially their freshman Zaire Smith.
Yeah, he was good. He's good.
He looked real good. Zach Smith, senior, he's been around for a while. He had a decent game. Came in and. And did some other things. And Jarrett Colvert, another freshman that we're going to be seeing for a long time, had a pretty decent game. So they've got a pretty decent team.
Yeah, they got guys.
A pretty great team. A team that can do some damage in the Big 12, but just didn't have it this game down there in Lubbock. And, you know, to highlight a couple of the KU players, obviously we've talked about Devontae, but, you know, other senior leadership. In Sviatoslav, Makai Luke obviously had a great game, 21 points, made a boatload of three-pointers, made four. He's getting at least four or five a game. It's almost automatic. And so these two guys will have big senior nights coming up tomorrow or whenever you're listening to this against Texas on Monday. And those two guys really led this team and took this team to victory with Udoka struggling on the offensive end, or at least on the scoring end of it. Vic kind of had another no-show, and Malik Newman, decent 12. Not obviously up to his maximum potential, but didn't need it because these other two guys were humming.
Yeah, you're right about LeGerald. Another kind of no-show after having a couple decent games, you know, back-to-back. It looked like he was stringing something together. Goes 1-for-5, 0-for-3 from 3. He gets one rebound. Andrew, he played 39 minutes and had one rebound. And 1-for-5 from the field. So didn't add a lot. No assists. You know, that's a lot of minutes to play, kind of just being a no-show. I think he played pretty good defense. But anyway, that was interesting. But, yeah, obviously this was the Devontae and the Svi show. Udoka didn't really get going. And this is something we were hoping. And we were thinking that he could actually, you know, have a decent game against Odiasi, a good challenge between the two of those guys, big, strong men. But yeah, just never quite got it going on the offensive end. This was obviously, this was the guard show. And man, Zaire Smith, he is a monster. Like, he's going to be one of those guys that's going to be tough for 4 years. I mean, I assume he's sticking around for at least a few years, but he is going to be awesome to watch in the Big 12. They're going to be good next year, Andrew. I think they're going to be real good. They're obviously losing Keenan Evans, but they're going to be good. So, interesting team to watch. Chris Beard's really got them going.
I think so. So, getting beyond the game was great, but I think what we really want to talk about is the clinching, or at least a share of the Big 12 title for the 14th year in a row. We can dwell on the 14, and we can talk about the significance of that, and we can reflect on that, you know, down the road. But I think it's important to kind of give this team its credit. And I say this every year because I think that you can kind of misattribute some of this to him, to the teams from the past. So, like, you know, almost give the credit to Mario Chalmers for this team, or give the credit to Thomas Robinson for this team. When really this team was Sviatoslav and Devontae and Malik and Udoka and all those guys figuring out how to win this league after suffering, you know, a lot of adversity, a lot of roadblocks along the way. I think that this team, you know, I'm trying to think back, maybe the 2015 team, maybe early on, like the 2009 team, or even the second year of that Mario's freshman year. Those teams were all doubted very heavily about whether they were going to win the Big 12. And I think the pressure builds as, you know, this streak continues. But this team may have faced the most pressure, the most doubt amongst media, amongst their own fans, amongst people in the Big 12. And they still were able to do it. Is that the impression you get?
Oh, absolutely.
About this team?
Yeah, I mean, remember back, I can't remember after which game it was, but I mean, Self literally said that it's the softest team they've ever had. I mean, he was trying to push every button he could, and actually, I think he meant it, you know, at that time. These guys found a way to get tough. Now, it's not Bill Self. It's not like the kind of tough that we've seen in the past from a Bill Self team, but you have to be tough if you pull yourself out of what they did and had the pressure, obviously, to continue the streak. And found a way to do it. I mean, there's toughness there. You heard Chris Beard in the post game say, yeah, my teams are tough. People are starting to recognize that Texas Tech plays tough brand of basketball. But those guys in the other locker room are tough, too. And they don't get the credit for how tough they are, the Jayhawks. And so that I love that he would kind of recognize that and called that out. Because you see four guards in the lineup, and maybe you don't see the bruising toughness, you know, big boy knock you around toughness that you think of from some former Bill Self teams, but they found a way to get tough. They obviously Self challenged them. I think he got the buttons pushed the right way. It seems like we're clicking at the right time.
I think you're right. And, you know, we've got two more games left. I mean, we did clinch this fairly early. This wasn't a come down to the wire type of deal.
Yeah. How about that? Let's just talk about that for a second. All of a sudden, this team was down one like a week and a half ago, and we just clinched the freaking thing with three games to go. Like, what?
Right. and we can get into that, but, I mean, this team to win it with two games left. It's not a down-to-the-wire thing. It's not like we got to go into Stillwater and win this game. Like, it's over early. It's over kind of early. I think this is one of the earlier clinchings in the entire country. I mean, you see a handful of things like, oh, Michigan State clinches and Virginia's clinched, but like otherwise, like everything's still up in the air.
You know who was the first to clinch?
I think it was Florida Gulf Coast.
Joe Dooley down there in Florida.
Joe Dooley,
Gulf Coast.
Florida Gulf Coast was the first one to clinch. Good work being done down there in the Atlantic Sun Conference. But you know, this team has to have its credit, and just like every year, you win that Big 12 title, and you start thinking about other things. So we've got two other regular season games that we're going to get to the rest of this podcast. We're going to talk about some Big 12 tournament. And we're going to talk maybe just kind of peek ahead, talk about some NCAA, you know, what this team has to do, what our thoughts on it. But, you know, if you don't mind, Kevin, you want to talk about the Big 12 the rest of the way?
Do it.
And we can kind of, you know, poke our games in there as well and then talk about senior night a little bit. But so Big 12 the rest of the way, I asked you to pick the last 10 games. To pick a winner for the last 10 games. And then from those, I did the seeding and did the bracket for the Big 12 tournament because I know you're not great with numbers or brackets.
No, not my fault.
So I went ahead and I did it for you. And I'll just explain, like, you know, Wednesday this will happen, Thursday these games will happen. You don't have to worry about any of that. Did it for you.
Thank you.
So this week in the early games before the Saturday games, we have five games, obviously. You picked West Virginia over Texas Tech in Morgantown. That's going to be a great game.
That'll be fun.
A game that everybody's going to pay attention to. You pick KU over Texas, Oklahoma State over Iowa State in Ames, Baylor over OU in Waco, which that has a lot of implications for seeding, and then TCU over K-State in Fort Worth. And then on the Friday and Saturday games, the Friday game is the OU over Iowa State game in Norman, and then the Saturday games you picked West Virginia over Texas in Austin.
That'll be interesting. That's a coin flip.
Okay. You pick West Virginia, but I mean, and that'll have some implications as well. Yep. All of these games have implications for seeding. Literally all of them. You have K-State over Baylor in Manhattan, Texas Tech over TCU in Lubbock, and then you picked Oklahoma State over KU in Stillwater.
I did.
You did. You said, you don't have to get into it yet, but you literally said that.
Tell me the first thing that you picked. I mean, like, I gave it no thought. Yeah. I just immediately responded.
No, and we're going to go with that. So those are the games. Those are the assumptions we're making in setting this bracket. So that puts the seeds in this order. This is with all the tiebreakers factored in. I went and did that math. That's that much dedication I gave to this. KU, the one seed at 13-5. West Virginia, the two seed at 12-6. Texas Tech, the three seed at 11-5. Then you have four seed K-State, 10-8. 5 TCU at 9-9. So TCU comes back. You know, they were hanging around the bottom forever, and now they're, you know, back into the top half. You have Baylor at the 6th seed at 8-10. And this is assuming, because there's a lot of tiebreaker stuff here, but this is assuming Baylor beats OU on Tuesday. And then 7 is OU at 8-10. 8 is OSU at 8-10. So you have OSU getting some wins, getting some play down the stretch.
I want them to, because I think that they could make the tournament if they win out.
Okay, that's fair.
I want 8. And then you have 9 teams. Really bad.
That'd be incredible. Then you have Texas at 9, at 7-11, and at the bottom is number 10, Iowa State. So this puts the bracket as follows. Wednesday is the 7 versus the 10, and that's OU versus Iowa State. And then you have the 8 versus the 9, OSU versus Texas. That means that KU would play either OSU or Texas. West Virginia would play OU or Iowa State. Texas Tech would play Baylor, and K-State would play TCU. So let's assume that's our bracket. Like, how do you feel about that? So first game would be OSU or Texas. Second game would be K-State or TCU.
You know, what's funny is you look at these teams and you see OSU and Texas. And OSU and Texas are 8-9 seed on this deal. I think I'd rather play both of them. I'd rather play K-State and TCU, who are the 4-5, than Oklahoma State and Texas. Like, I think that they're just as good right now. Right now in the season, at this very point, I think they're just as good.
Right.
So I'm not sure it matters. I think we're going to have to play good to win no matter who we play, because all those teams are going to be playing. I mean, they're obviously going to be thinking about they need to win to get in the NCAA tournament or to be sure about the NCAA. It means a lot more to them than it means to us. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And player or games like or teams like OU's got a fairly high seed in all the bracketology. K-State's like first four in.
I know, it's crazy.
Like a play-in game. Yeah. And K-State's the four seed here. I mean, assuming all this plays out this way. Other teams like Texas also first four in. But you know, some of the guys on the lower end are looking better than some of the guys at the higher end, like TCU or K-State. So you know, who knows? It is definitely not going to happen this way.
No.
The way we just mapped it out. But, you know, you can sort of see how things, right. You can sort of see how things will play out, assuming a lot of that shakes out the way we think it does. And, you know, it'll change because every game matters. Usually we have a couple teams that are locked in at this point. But KU could fall to a 3 seed.
Isn't that crazy?
We could have a share. Yeah, because West Virginia. Actually, we'd only fall to a 2.
No, they'd be 2 because they play each other, right?
Right. We could fall to a 2. West Virginia could sneak up there.
That's it. That would assume that we lose both of our remaining games. So we win any game, we're the 1 seed.
Right. Right. So, I mean, there's a lot to go in this. You know, we have a share of the title, but there's a lot to go. So that's the Big 12 the rest of the way. It'll be fun to watch this coming year, and then we'll come to you next week with a full preview of the Big 12 tournament. Maybe we'll get Brian Haney on.
Hey, how about that? Is that
too early of a... Because he always comes on right before a Big 12 tournament.
That's
right?
True. That's true. He does.
Even when he was down at Texas Tech, he would come on.
I will be... So I'm going to Northern California and going to wine country for a week.
Oh, I've heard of that.
So I'll be up in the Healdsburg area taking in some Dry Creek and Alexander Valley wines in the next weekend. So, but Andrew, I get back Sunday, so I might still be able to do the podcast Sunday. It might be Monday though.
All right. Well, get a hold of Brian. See what we can do.
See what we can do. So there you go.
He'll have all of the insight, all of the details.
He's our guy.
If not, then I just made a promise for the podcast that we cannot cash.
It wouldn't be the first time or the last.
All right. Well, let's get into some more Big 12 stuff before we go on to a few other things that you wanted to talk about. And that's Big 12 awards. Not the Jayhawk Talkies, not the Jayhawk Talk Big 12 awards. We'll do that next week. But the awards that I want to talk about is Big 12 Player of the Year. Now, I alluded to this earlier in the podcast about who's going to win this. And I think I asked you the question yesterday. Is it possible after this Texas Tech game that Devontae Graham wins Big 12 Player of the Year, but Trey Young wins National Player of the Year?
Absolutely.
I think the chances are pretty good that that happens.
Absolutely. Yeah, it wouldn't shock me at all. Trey Young has obviously got the entire sports media of at every level enamored with him with some of the stuff that he's done over the course of the season. He's probably still a front runner, but when you get into the Big 12 and you run in Big 12 circles and you run in Big 12 media who vote on these things, it would not shock me at all if Devontae Graham gets picked. And you heard Bill Self in the post game, man, he laid it on pretty thick. This is why Bill Self is the best. And I'm usually not like a, oh man, our coach is the best guy, but he's the best because he went out straight after that game and said, nail in the coffin. This game shows 100% Devontae Graham is the absolutely bar none Big 12 Player of the Year. You can't possibly not give it to him. Like, he went out and just starts laying it on thick in post game. I mean, thick. I mean, so just, he's stumping. I mean, he's right on the back of that train, just yelling at everyone, all the electorate. This guy is absolutely the one that's getting this award. So I thought that was pretty funny, and awesome at the same time. So what did you think of that?
Well, I totally agree. I mean, obviously he was politicking. Obviously he's politicking very well.
Yeah.
Because it was the game day game. Every camera from every big sports media outlet was pointed on him. It wasn't like him standing against a wall on a random Tuesday in front of Allen Fieldhouse with Jesse Newell out there and maybe the guy from The Shiver. Like, it was everyone. Like, everyone was there watching the interview, and everybody, at least from every big publication, had somebody there. So he was getting his message out. And the message is that how can you not put him Big 12 Player of the Year? How can you put someone on a losing team as Big 12 Player of the Year? And this is how I think it plays out. So let's look at the stats real quick. Devontae, in conference games only, is averaging 19.4 points per game, which is kind of incredible thinking about past Bill Self teams.
Yeah.
I think the only two players who are ahead of him are
Frank had
Frank
more.
Mason.
Yeah.
Frank Mason, I think Thomas Robinson.
Did Wayne Simeon?
I don't think so.
I don't think Perry did.
It would be close. Wayne would be up there too, but we're talking about a handful of guys here. But he also is averaging 6.7 assists per game.
Yeah.
Which is Aaron Miles level.
Yep.
So if you combine the scoring of Wayne Simeon or of Frank Mason, and you're adding in the assists of, well, Frank Mason, National Player of the Year. But you also have Trey Young, who's averaging 28.8 points per game. I think that leads the country, or we did at one point an 8.4 assists per game, which does lead the Big 12, and I think still leads the country. But OU's 7-9.
Yep.
7-9, and have really taken a backseat in February. I think they're 1-6 in February. I mean, they were 6-3, and now they're now sitting at 7-9. This is how I think it plays out. If OU can get two wins down the stretch, and they can go 9-9, I think there'll be a lot of people out there who are gonna be able to vote for Trey Young. But if they go 7-11, or if they go 8-10, there's people out there who could say, "I can't vote for a guy on a losing team in conference.
Yeah, I get it.
So I think if you're really wanting Devontae to win, I think you got to root for OU to lose at least one game this week.
I think they will. I mean, they go to Baylor. I think Baylor wins that game. We'll see, though. I mean, that will be interesting. That's this week, and then who do they close with? They close with Iowa State and Norman. So they should win that game.
Right. So it comes down to that Baylor game. Yeah. A lot comes down to that Baylor game.
Yep. That'll be interesting. Well, hopefully Devontae wins it. I think he deserves it. I don't think that – I mean, he's obviously run into a buzzsaw. Like, if Trey wasn't in this league, if Trey was somewhere else, it would be an entire shoe-in. I mean, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. We would have already given him the award. Like, everyone would have given him the award. There are some guys – I mean, Juwan Evans and I don't know. You could sort of – I mean, there's a couple other guys who probably are in the conversation, but – it wouldn't even, it would just be just for fun. Like, we wouldn't even be really.
Juwan Evans. Keenan Evans?
I'm sorry, Keenan Evans. Sorry.
Like, no, last year, yeah.
Not Juwan Evans. Okay. Keenan Evans. Sorry. Keenan Evans, and I don't know. Like, you could make a couple of arguments, but it would just be to argue. Like, it wouldn't be for real. But yeah, I think it's because Trae Young is here, I mean, there's a discussion. And I'll tell you this, like, a month ago, did you expect Devontae Graham even to have a chance to win the Big 12 Player of the Year?
No, and I thought that, you know, with the amount of good point guards in this league, or amount of just guards generally, I mean, I thought he would always be a lock for first team All Big 12.
Sure.
But you started to kind of think like, okay, well, these spots are kind of starting to be
taken.
Yeah,
that's true. We did talk about that.
And I think he still gets in, but it's not a lock like it used to be. But obviously he's turned it on in February like a good Bill Self team does,
and now,
with senior leadership.
Now they're talking about whether he's an All-American or not. I mean, he's now entered that conversation.
Right.
So
I mean, certainly would be considered, you know, if he can get his name in the rafters, then that is, you know, good on him. Because, you know, similar story to Frank Mason, coming very lowly recruited, lowly sought after guy to turn himself into that. You know, obviously he's got the blueprint to follow and you know, a guy helping him along the way in Frank Mason. But, you know, to do that twice, to have two guys end up like that, that's catching lightning in a bottle twice. That doesn't happen.
Hey, so I want to talk about, before we move on to the FBI stuff, I just want to talk about this real quick. We mentioned it last week about how Kansas found a way after in really important games to win the game. And let's just go back over the schedule, like go back over the course of the year. The first like important game, like, okay, this is under the lights. This is huge, big game, national media. Everybody's watching. That was Kentucky, right? First game.
Right.
It was technically the second game, but it was our first big game. And it
wasn't pretty.
And it was awful. Yeah, it was a terrible game, but we won, right? We found a way to win. Now, obviously, Kentucky ended up being not as good as people thought, but they still got dudes, and all of a sudden they're looking pretty good recently. But still, that was the first like big game, right? And then we had a couple losses against Washington and Arizona State. I would wager that those were certainly not must wins, but they didn't have the feel of like a holy crap, we really should win this game. We really need to win this game. You know what I mean? Like a big time environment. The next one that I would wager was the big time environment that we like a must win situation was that TCU game at TCU after losing to Texas Tech at home. Remember, we got drubbed by Texas Tech January 2nd by 12 points at home. And you look down and you see, okay, we lose this game at TCU. We're 1-2 in the conference, and there's, well, was it two or three teams that would have been 3-0. It was something like that. So, and we go, man, we could fall two games behind. And they went down there and got that win. So that's like, that to me was the next, like, holy crap, we need to win this game. Do you agree?
I think so. Well, you could talk about the Texas Tech game before that. Not in terms of must win, but in terms of, you know, a lot of focus. Because Texas Tech was coming in ranked. KU was ranked. So, I mean, you had a, you know, pretty prominent matchup. But like, and we lost that game. But maybe we didn't consider it. It shouldn't be in the conversation, maybe as these other ones, as, you know, the pressure starts to build, just in terms of pressure.
I agree. And I don't know about you, but even at that time, I didn't count Texas Tech to be as big of a threat. Did you? I mean, I know we...
No, you can go back and listen to our podcast and how we power rated them. Now, they went up.
Oh, sure.
At
no,
this point,
absolutely.
We were giving them... We were probably giving them more respect at that point than most people were, and you can verify that by going back and listening to our podcast. But we definitely didn't think they were a title contender. We thought they were like a 3 or 4,
yeah,
5-seed-ish.
And they hadn't really beat anybody. I mean, the only game they really beat anyone in the top 80 of KenPom before seeing us was Nevada, which turned out to be a pretty good win. But still, like, and it was an overtime. That was the only top 80 KenPom win they had coming in to see us. They had beat Baylor. But like right before that game. Now they had crushed Baylor. Remember, they won by like 30 points. That's all we knew. I mean, and so I guess what I'm saying is I'm not willing to say that was a must or felt like a must win situation. Obviously now we know that it was a big one. And then Andrew, I'd actually fast forward all the way to that. And it sounds kind of silly, but that Iowa State game on the road, because after losing to Baylor by 16 points on the road, you look down and you go, we're a game behind in the Big 12. We basically feel like we need to win out, and we absolutely need to beat Tech to have a chance, but we need to win out, and you got to start with Iowa State when you know your next three games are West Virginia, Oklahoma, and Texas Tech, the three best teams in the league. But first, you got to go to Iowa State, and we got there 1-6, won that game. Like, that felt like a must-win situation. It was a must-win, right? And they got that win. And then they had those two games at home, which were still must wins, but they were still at home, and that was West Virginia and Oklahoma. And then obviously the Texas Tech game on the road. To me, those six games were all felt like big game, must win. This is like back to the wall games, and we won all of them. And that's why this Tech game felt like one that we would probably win, because it had that same feel. Now here's my kind of corollary point to this. I'm not sure the Texas or Oklahoma State games to close the season have the same feel anymore.
No.
I mean, senior night, I guess you could try to like go with that, and maybe Svi and Devontae are fired up for that reason. Like last time they're playing out in Fieldhouse, maybe that's all it takes, but it doesn't have the same kind of, oh shit, this is monster, this is a huge game, backs against the wall type of game. And the good, I guess here's my other point. This team, Self even said something to the extent of, in his post games, that's something like, this certainly isn't the most talented team. This certainly isn't the toughest team, the best rebounding team, the strongest teams we've had here, but they all think they can win, and they all think they're better than they are. and sometimes when you need, your back's against the wall, and you have the mentality. Like, I hope that carries forward into the postseason is really what I'm getting at with this whole thing. Like, if they can take the same mentality that they took in those six games, those must win six games, and they bottle that and take it into the, a lose and go home tournament, like, they actually might have a chance. And that's my rant. And yeah, I just wanted to get that out.
I think so too. And if you look at the bracketologies, we're being put as the fourth number one seed. We've got the most quadrant one wins. I think that's the buzzword quadrant You'll hear as we go through these next couple wins, but we have 11 quadrant one wins. And, if that's what they're looking at, then we're at the top of the heap, and it's going to be hard to put us lower, because once you get past, I think North Carolina has like 10, a couple other people are sort of close, but then it quickly falls off where, the teams who are being considered for these top seeds are, have 5, maybe have 3, maybe they have 6. We have 11. So if that's something they're considering as a value to the seeding process, we're going to be pretty high no matter what going forward. But closing out this season, you didn't mention that they were, viewed as this, high importance, high leverage thing. I agree in these last two games, but I do think that there's something soothing about going into these last couple games where you have it locked up. You don't really need it. You kind of go into these, feeling okay. You feel like, okay, I can enjoy this game. I'm not going to have a heart attack watching this game like I do every other game the entire year. Big 12 games, you'll sort of feel that way. Obviously, NCAA tournament games, you turn that up, you're going to have a heart attack in the first 5 minutes if things go wrong. But these games, you can at least take a little breather. You know, but tomorrow night against Texas, we have senior night. We have three seniors who will be speaking, and obviously that is Devontae, Sviatoslav, and none other than go-to guy, Clay Young.
He was go-to early, man. He was go-to.
He was KenPom official go-to guy. you know, and that's one other thing to consider here. This team has gone from Clay Young having to play meaningful minutes at the four and five position in November and December to being considered for a one seed and having won the Big 12, at least a share with two games to go. Just shows you the amount of progress and the amount of, you know, the difference a couple of months makes and some games in between make. But anyway, it'll be fun to see those two guys. I know Devontae and Sfi are very close friends. Maybe we see that come out. But obviously, these two are the two big workhorses in terms of scoring and offense for this team. And it'll be good to see these guys. And sorry to see these guys, you know, leave the team. Obviously, they had a chance to go pro, and you mentioned that earlier with Devontae. You know, Sfi did test the waters and decided to come back. And you know, maybe he's played his self into the draft. I think he might have done that.
Yeah,
And maybe we don't talk about Sfi as much. When Sfi was a freshman, we talked about Sfi constantly. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
We were like, Sfi needs to be the point guard. Sfi's the best player on the team. You see that jump shot? Sfi's making every three-pointer
in pre-game
warm-up. That's all. Like, this podcast basically turned into how many three-pointers
did you see him make 16 three-pointers in a row? Because he did.
Right.
Like, we sat there and watched him.
And it was actually a lot of fun to watch Sfi warm up.
Yeah.
And so maybe we haven't really got into that recently, which I feel bad about because I used to love doing that.
You know what?
Love just talking about Sfi.
You know my favorite Sfi story?
Crazy things. But, you know, so this will be his last game. Maybe I'll need to show up really early
to
watch him do that.
You need to.
My last opportunity in Allen Fieldhouse.
You know my favorite Sfi story? So I was a counselor at a camp, and we got Bill Self to come speak at it. And so he came in, he does some, like, occasionally he'll do speeches for free. Usually when he does paid speeches, he just has people give to the foundation, like it's this foundation. But this time we didn't have any money. So he came and this was in Manhattan. So a Boys State of Kansas, American Legion deal. He shows up in Manhattan to give the speech, keynote deal. And he's backstage, and usually, you know, when you have someone who's there to give a speech, unless it's a politician who does a stump speech all the time, they have, like, a speech written or something written out. Bill shows up with, like, literally an envelope that he has scribbled some stuff on, and I can't read any of it. Like, none of it makes sense. It was just, like, it had probably 17 words on it, and then none of it made any sense. And he's like, "You got a pen?" I said, "Yeah." So I hand him a pen, and he writes, like, a couple more things down and then puts it in his pocket, and that's all he had. And so he's kind of sitting back there, and we had just got Sfi. And I said, I was like, "So you excited that we got Sviatoslav on the team?" And he said, "How you say it?" Like, that's what I said, "Sviatoslav Mikhailuk?" And he goes, "They just told me to call him Sfi." Like, that's all he said. And then he said, "I swear to God," he said, "the next thing was, the Spurs think he's one of the best shooters in the world." And I said, "Like, best shooters, like in, like, prep shooters, like high school?" He's like, "No, one of the best shooters in the world. The Spurs told," like, and of course they've got, you know, all their foreign scouts and RC Buford and all that, you know, they've got the connections with Self. But that's literally what he said, is at that time when he was, whatever, 15 years old or 16.
He was 16.
Spurs thought he was one of the best shooters in the world. Pure shooters in the world. And I thought that was pretty cool. And so then, of course, to finish the story, he goes on stage with his little envelope and just absolutely kills it. I mean, just does a killer speech. And I mean this, we've said it a bunch. Self is one of the best, like, if he wanted to run for office, he's one of the best politicians out there. He remembers everyone's face. He remembers everyone's name. He's got that, you know, he's got that thing about him. You know what I mean? That he could absolutely run for office and win. But you know what? He's a pretty good basketball coach too.
I agree. So we'll see Speed come out and give a speech. We'll see Clay Young come out and give a speech. We'll see Devontae come out and give a speech. And obviously, as you mentioned, we'll see Bill Self come out and give an envelope speech tomorrow. But you know what I'm most excited about tomorrow, win or lose, is when they bring out the table.
Oh, the trophies.
And then bring out the other table. And then bring out the other table. And bring out the other table. And then they line all the trophies up. And then they bring out the new one.
And then
that's what I'm
somebody in the stands has the back to, back to, back to, back to, back to. And they line them all up. So it's back to, back to, back to, back to, back to, back to, back to.
That's what I'm excited for.
I like that too. I like that too. Like, listen, the streak is cool. And I've probably devalued the streak over time a little bit. I think some people have to, like, some people have done it to the nth degree. They're like, screw the streak. We need more big, you know, we need more Final Fours. Like, there's those people out there. But, like, that's pretty cool, right? I mean, it's pretty cool.
I mean, not even UCLA did that. And it's just, I can't imagine a season where we didn't win the Big 12. Because, you know, you have these guys like Duke and North Carolina. Like, Duke hasn't won a regular season ACC since, like, 2010.
Isn't that crazy?
But if we were to finish second in the Big 12, like, I would be distraught. Like, I would be beside myself. Like, what went wrong? What went wrong?
And it's fun.
Like, has Coach K ever said, like, what went wrong?
No. I mean, what's funny is, You hear, like, there are literally people out there, and, well, I mean, they're Twitter people, so, like, I don't know if they're real people, but they say things like, I wish the streak would end. I think we need it to end so we can focus more on postseason. Like, but
I don't know if that makes any sense.
I think their point is that it consumes so much during the regular season that you put so much into it that you're not, you know, once you have won that, you've continued the streak, that you don't have the same mentality going into the, I think that's all bullshit, but, like, that's the take. So anyway, I think that Self's mentality has always been, if you take care of the league, it takes care of your seeding. You're a one or two or three seed, more than likely a one or two in our league. And if you put yourself in the best position in the bracket standpoint, then you just roll the ball out and see how you do. I think that's the right approach, and that's the approach that he takes. But anyway,
yeah, the approach is win games. How about just go win games?
All right, I'm opening a beer because it's time to talk about the FBI. Okay. I need a beer for that.
All right.
If you
good?
I'm good.
I still have a half one, so I'm good to go.
I just cashed this huge thing of rum I've been sipping on. So, okay, Andrew. We talked about this a little bit back when the first report came out, and they did their little press conference, and they arrested some dudes, and. We obviously knew there was more to come, right? Like, that was the discussion. We didn't know what was going to come. And then a week ago or whenever it was, they start talking about, there was a report out there that said something to the extent of everybody should be scared. Like when it was right after they released the top 16, you know, the seeds, they said more than half those teams need to be scared. And so, you know, we're all kind of going, oh Christ, what do we got here? And then Yahoo reports this weekend, I guess it was Friday, does a full report from Pat Forty and Pete Thamel, releasing a couple documents and really getting into some of the payments and some of the things that was taking place with NBA agent Andy Miller and his former associate Christian Dawkins over at ASM Sports. So we see in this report some expense reports and some balance sheets talking about cash advances and entertainment, travel expenses and things like that, right? And so, like, that's we'll just tee it up there. Like, that's what we'll start with it. And a couple things here. They talked about, you know, this once this came out, of course, college basketball Twitter goes nuts, right?
Yeah, Friday morning was a little brutal with a lot of immediate hot takeies.
Oh, the hot takeies were everywhere.
Doing their hot take nature. So it was, you know, interesting to see how it was interpreted as the day went along.
Right. And the more you started to read it, like, I'll give you my reaction. I mean, I open it up. I wake up. I look down. I actually woke up at like 4 that morning because my kid woke up and I was up trying to rock him back to sleep so I could get another hour and a half of sleep. And I did, and he fell back asleep. So I missed this when I checked Twitter then, or checked my phone then, and then checked my phone when I woke up at like 7, and I had like 35 tweets or 35 mentions and a couple texts. And so I'm like, oh Christ, what is this? And you know, my first reaction was, could have been worse, right? We saw something from Apples. Josh Jackson's mom accepted, what was it, $2,700 or something, cash advance. Yes. And then we saw,
which she's denied,
which she has since denied. And then we saw that Elijah Johnson was listed with a $15,000 and $20, something like that, loan with a date of 2015 on it, unpaid. And it further listed his Turkish basketball team and made reference that he had signed with the Turkish team and that a payment plan or repayment or something.
The signing reference was he re-signed with the agency.
Oh, is that what you read it as? Re-signed? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there you go.
Because he had left that agency, signed with somebody else, and then came back.
Okay. The thing that was a little unclear there is when that loan was made. Was it made in 2015? Right. Was it made before that and he still hadn't paid it back? And so it's still on the balance sheet. That was what was unclear. So, but my like initial reaction is Michigan State, way worse. Kentucky with Bam, way worse. There were Duke, North Carolina, Texas, USC, Alabama. I mean, there were several big schools listed there. Miles Bridges, Colin Sexton. I mean, huge names in like that are still playing. Wendell Carter that are still playing now. None of our guys were on there, which is good. But you know, I think my first reaction was could have been worse, right? Is that
could have been? Yeah, could have been a lot worse.
Is that the way you took it?
I mean, you've always had like fear about things going on that you don't know about, like specifically with guys like Cliff Alexander. Maybe a handful of others. He's the guy that first comes right? to my brain. And if you go to Cliff's Twitter account, Cliff was like, you know, or saying like, Illinois fans are waking up this morning, like saying, where's Cliff Alexander? And he mentioned something about that. That's like, funny. No, I'm not in there.
Yeah.
I'm glad he wasn't
yet. That's the other thing. I think you could, when we talk about the Twitter reactions, you can put people in a number of categories. My favorite category, bar none, is the like denial category. Like our school's none of this is true. This is all, but like none of this is true. Our school would never do this. Our guys would never do this. Like that's one reaction. And there were a lot of those for KU folks that were tweeting me, immediately coming to the defense of everybody saying this is all BS, blah 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 blah. And then there's the probably like the real, this is probably all the national media, but the reaction of the NCAA is corrupt. And so it has nothing to do with all this stuff. Like it's the NCAA's fault, like that reaction.
Right. Right.
Which
the holier than thou.
Right.
Nothing to see here.
Every podcast you will listen to, because I've listened to most of them that are college basketball focused, every single one of them spent 45 minutes on that. You know what I mean? Like, we need to fix it. There's nothing surprising here, nothing wrong. It's obviously all the NCAA's fault, blah, 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 right? Like, that's the reaction you're going to hear from just about everybody in the national media. I'm going a different direction with that, Andrew. And you have your phone in front of you. You're looking up something really important.
No, I'm looking up your old tweets on this.
Oh, okay.
Look.
Oh, look at that. I'm going a different way with this. Like, I'm a rules guy. I'm a lawyer. I work with regulations. Like, I'm a rules guy. I guess if people are saying that players need to be paid, like, I totally get that. And actually, I agree 100%. But do you think, like, this under-the-table stuff wouldn't happen even if players were getting paid? Like, it would still happen. All this shit that's all nefarious underlings, like bag dropping, all that stuff would all still take place. Like, it would all take place. It would still happen. And here's the funny part. The FBI part of this, like, the reason the FBI is enforcing the NCAA rules is because the FBI actually cares about this, because there are literally laws that are being broken. Not to mention, like, the IRS might be interested in money being dropped. But, like, if you are transferring money in this way, like, that is illegal. And so, like, there are reasons why the FBI is involved here. I think my other favorite take was, the real Trumpy take was, thanks, FBI, for taking care of college basketball and not doing all the stuff that the FBI is getting blamed for right now. Like, there was that take, which was real, real hot fire. But there's, like, a zillion FBI employees. Like, some of them do not focus on that stuff. They focus on this stuff. And Andrew, they have 3,000 hours of tape. That's from their report, 3,000 hours of tape. And the other thing that I want to get out on this is, you read through this report from 40 and from Thamel, and then we also heard about the whole Sean Miller thing, which we'll get to. But, like, the point is, we see two documents here and one phone call. Like, that's what these entire reports are based off of. And there are 3,000 hours of tape out there. There's obviously more to come, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, this was obviously selectively leaked because it was a single document that kind of summed it all up into one.
Yep.
Who leaked it? Why did they leak it? I mean, obviously it came from the government, because they're the one in possession of this. And it's, you know, as lawyers, we're both lawyers, it's a little concerning that, I mean, there's probably a protection order here that would get out this way.
Right.
I'm not here saying the leaks are real, the news is fake, we need to go after the leakers. I'm not saying that. But it is a little concerning that's how they're choosing to operate and choosing to do business. It's a little concerning. I know that that's kind of what it is, but that's also illegal.
Yep.
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, is someone taking a meal from an agent more worse, or is breaching government laws regarding, you know, protection of privacy and a protection order worse? I don't know. I think the latter is worse. So it's kind of, you know, what do you have to become to try to get at these guys? That being said, you know, I'm not in the camp of, you know, suddenly this should all be okay because players should be paid. I'm not in that camp.
Yeah.
Like, maybe we can figure out a way to make that work, because I think there's a lot of people who are making a lot of money off of these players and the players are getting zero. Is there something we can work out? I think so, but we're not there yet. We're not there yet, and those aren't the rules. And so if you're adopting this category of, you know, we should be the rule followers, no, and I'm going to jump in there with you. I'm going to jump in there with you.
Come on in.
Just, you know, we have an ethical duty here. we can work on solutions, but we're not there yet. And so, I agree. And so seeing these things and, you know, to get into the practical matters, not in terms of, you know, what do I think ethically and morally and blah, blah, blah. We have Josh Jackson here, whose mother was allegedly given some sort of expense of $2,700. That's not a ton compared to these other guys. I don't think that we're, based on these documents, at any risk of, you know, having anything taken away.
You wouldn't, you know, think
this,
so.
This has happened before. Like Cliff Alexander, like, we didn't have to vacate that 2015 season because, you know, it came out that his mom took a loan. Like, he was, you know, ruled ineligible for the rest of that season. But, you know, beyond that, I don't think I have a ton of worry over facts as they currently stand. And, you know, if they selectively leak something else to try to make something happen, you know, that's something. But, you know, in terms of the Kansas thing, you know, for us, you know, I don't think that there's a ton to worry about now. But I'd like to get into a couple of these other guys before we finish. Specifically, well, like Miles Bridges, Kevin Knox, DeAndre Ayton, you know, apparently, Wendell Carter from Duke. Apparently, this weekend, they all went through the NCAA to see if these guys could be eligible and play on Saturday, play on Sunday, for Miles Bridges for Sunday. And they all were able to do that. They were all able to, at least in this case of Duke, able to, get this, you know, work with the NCAA directly and declare these guys eligible so they could play their games this weekend. What happened with Billy Preston? Why did it take 3 months before he had to bail to Bosnia when they were able to do this in a matter of hours?
So is that totally true?
I don't
true?
Understand how this process works.
Is that true?
There's something obviously we don't understand.
Wait a minute. So is that true that they actually got clearance from the NCAA to have them play?
At least on Duke's side.
Okay, I didn't hear that. Like, maybe I missed that. I thought they all personally went through it with their own compliance people and said, we think we can justify this.
Right. I'm not familiar with the Arizona, Michigan State, but at least on the Duke side, they were able to clear him with the NCAA.
Well, yeah, if what you said is true, then yeah, that's total BS. But, you know, the other part of that is with the Preston thing, and I don't know enough about it to be able to know for sure. But sometimes the NCAA asks for more information, and we either have it or we don't have it, or we don't want to give it to them, or someone doesn't want to give it to them, and they can't force you to do it. They don't have the power of subpoena to you know, get that information. And maybe they just had some more questions that we couldn't answer, or that Billy couldn't answer or didn't want to answer. I respect that is a possibility that could have happened there. And that's that. But if that's not the reason and they just sat on it and they were just dragging their feet, which is also a possibility, then yeah, that's total bullshit compared to getting a clearance and with a phone call and a smile and a handshake and then, you know,
right,
clear.
There's obviously something going on that we don't know all the details,
sure,
but it's very frustrating. It's very frustrating.
I agree with that 100%. And I don't know what to think about those guys. You know, usually the situation is you hold them out and you seek reinstatement, right? Like, that's how that works.
Right. That's how it worked with Cliff Alexander a couple of years ago. Was not reinstated, sat out the rest of the year.
And I don't know how they can, based on these allegations, assuming they're true. And I think until you can prove they're not true, you kind of have to assume they're true. Otherwise, you risk vacating games, right? Like, that's the point. That's why you hold them out. And so assuming any of this is true and you have a potential systematic failure at that school for some reason or another, even if they didn't know about it, which frankly, most of the time they don't know about it. Like, that's part of the point. They don't want to know about it, but they know that it's possible.
Well, and part of it's not like, I'm not trying to drive you to X school. In certain cases it is. We'll close it out with Sean Miller here. But in certain cases, it's not, I don't want you to go to Villanova. It's, I want you to sign with my agency when you go pro.
Of course. Yeah. That, totally different. I mean, totally different reasons for it, but still an impermissible benefit and affects your eligibility in your amateurism. Like, that's the NCAA part. It's not the school part. Like, at that point, the school, like, assuming you didn't know and you could show you didn't know and there's no ties whatsoever, it's not like the Sean Miller thing. It's not like the Rick Pitino thing. This is actually, like, you know, potentially what happened with Josh Jackson, what happened with Cliff Alexander, where you have a situation where it affects their amateurism, it affects their eligibility, but it does not affect the school because the school, it didn't have anything to do with it. Now, here's my – go ahead. I see you're jumping.
Well, I was gonna say, or like Bam Adebayo,
bad loan,
didn't work out. They did not sign with the agency.
Hashtag
bad loan, write it off.
I do love that. Bad loan is gonna be a hashtag that I'm gonna use a lot for some reason. It won't even make sense, but I'm gonna use bad loan. Ask Fran and bad loan are my two hashtags go to right now. The funny part is the other person on Twitter from KU are the people that say, we don't do any of that stuff. We would never do any of that. The Ivory Tower crowd. And, like, we've talked about this a little bit. Like, we do some of this stuff. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that we operate in the gray. I'm not saying we pay players. I'm not saying we're Sean Miller in any respect. I don't think that's true at all. But, like, we operate in the gray. You have to. And the gray might be as gray as this. You have assistant coaches, some of the best in the business. Townsie is one of the best recruiters out there, Curtis Townsend. You cannot tell me that Curtis Townsend does not know when a guy that he's recruiting has a family, that has connections to certain people and to certain programs and to certain AAU circuits and to certain bagmen and to certain handlers that are absolutely renowned for paying players and steering players. You cannot tell me that some of the recruits that we have got over time do not have not had those things happen and have not been affiliated with those same exact people that are underlings in this dark, dark, terrible underbelly of NCAA college basketball and college athletics. Like, they, it's their job to know. It's their job to go meet these families and get to know them. It's their job to steer people. It's their job to try to get them to convince them to come to Kansas. They have to learn these things. They have to learn everything about that kid. And just, like, it is a, and this is what it comes down to. It is a calculated risk. Do you recruit that player knowing full well that there's a chance that that guy has taken some stuff? But he's a top five recruit and he wants to come to your school. Yes, that's the answer. Now, if you're paying him, that's a different story. Like that, the DeAndre Ayton thing's a different story. But like, if you know that stuff is happening, you know, Cliff Alexander, Snacks knew that dude was getting paid something, right? Like, Snacks knew.
Yeah.
Like, you can't possibly tell me.
The entire state of Illinois probably.
Exactly. You cannot tell me that these guys do not know that these kids could possibly.
I'm not saying it was KU, but exactly. Like something.
And that's totally different. Like we said, they're not necessarily steering to KU. But DeAndre Ayton, Andrew, remember that recruitment? Like, that was the weirdest.
Well, yeah, and let's close out
that
with that.
That was the weirdest recruitment ever.
Right, so if you go back to the 24/7 crystal ball, I think it had 87% KU and like 13%
Kentucky.
Yep. And so those were the two schools. I think Kentucky had backed off, and the only school who was really recruiting DeAndre Ayton was KU.
Literally,
and I think
that was it.
That it was even said in a article with 24/7. It's like, so who's recruiting you?
Just Kansas. Which is scary.
And this is towards the end.
Time out before you go further with that. Now that we know what we know. Is that a little scary to you?
That people are able to swoop in at the end and get our guys?
No. That Kansas was recruiting a guy who clearly was interested in and ultimately took money.
I don't know if we knew that.
I don't know either, but
because this isn't the first time this has happened with Arizona.
Tarczewski, baby.
Tarczewski, same deal.
That's what landed
the last minute.
That's how we got Landon Lucas.
Landon
Lucas came to Kansas because Caleb ended up at Arizona, shockingly. But yeah.
And we all heard the stuff at that point, and it was just, you know, at that point, just talk. But seems like it was real deal. For this Sean Miller thing to happen, you know, and it's just, I hate to go down this rabbit hole, but man, imagine this team with DeAndre Ayton before.
Oh, I don't even like it. Oh my God. If we had DeAndre Ayton on this team, I'm sorry, LeGerald, but you would not be playing. And this team would be stupid. I mean, it would be stupid, stupid good. But, yeah, let's not go down that.
We don't need to go down that rabbit hole, but like, if you're concerned about that, whatever, we didn't try to beat that number.
That's true.
And I think that economically, it would have been smarter to try to beat that number.
Absolutely. 100 grand
to offer 110.
Are you kidding me? Yeah.
ROI on that's pretty good.
You'll make that back in a game. Like of his jersey. Like
100,000 for him is a pretty small number, pretty cheap number.
Yeah.
It
sucks for Sean Miller. Sean was on our list, on my list of coaches I'd want to hire if Bill Self ever left. He's not on that list anymore.
Well, and what do you think? So he obviously didn't play in the game, or he didn't coach in the game yesterday.
Yeah.
Does he coach again this season, or does he coach again for Arizona at all?
Well, so I watched. Did you watch College Game Day in the morning show?
Off and on. I didn't watch the whole thing.
They spent like the first quarter of that show basically talking about Sean Miller. And if you listen to those guys, it's almost like he'll never coach again. I think it obviously comes down to what the ultimate facts were. And if this tape ever gets out, he'll never coach again. Like if we start hearing the recording of him saying, I'm the money man. Don't talk to my assistants. I'm the only one that does money. Here's $100,000 payment is coming for me, as it allegedly says. Then, yeah, he will never coach again in college basketball. He might find a tack on somewhere else, but like, that's it. But if it doesn't come out and this thing goes, gets swept under the rug somehow, like most of these ultimately do. And, you know, it's just a report and you can't corroborate it. I don't know, Andrew, like he certainly is denying it and he's saying the truth is going to set me free. Like maybe.
It's Trump's America.
It is Trump's America. All right. With that, I think that's probably enough on the FBI stuff. Maybe more to come, maybe not. But, you know, if this is it, I hope this is it, because Kansas actually ended up okay in this deal. So let's get out of here, Andrew. Find us on Twitter, Jayhawk Talk, at Sherlock Hoops. Leave that comment review on iTunes. We appreciate it very much. We will see you next week, hopefully with a couple more wins under our belt and winning this sucker outright. Until then, Rock Chalk.
I tried to tell them every time we on the court. I tried to tell them that we never coming up short. I tried to tell them that we came here to get the win. I tried to tell them that they should never let us in. They say that we the best, but I say we the greatest. That's why they try to knock us down and always seem to hate us. That's why they talk about us. They know they can never fade us. It's tradition and that Kansas pride that has truly made us. They know just how we feel. They know at Allen Field that we gon' keep it real. Shout out to Bill. This for them fans that waited off in them long lines, camped out before the games, and they stayed a long time. Every dollar that we spend just to watch our team win, on a Jayhawk shirt or a new clean Benz with a sticker on the back with the K and the U. Uh-huh, yeah, baby, that'll make you say, ooh. We at the top of the top, just like we should be. Started from the bottom, thanks to what James could see. Dr. Naismith made a game for man, changed lives for the players, and did the same for the fans.
Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, this baby. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby.
All them years that we've been cheering, everything that we've been hearing, all them spreads that we've been clearing, never been no team we fearing, and look how Bill got us steering, all them tournaments appearing, with no team that's interfering, nine times get the cheering, with them banners held high, and the crowd going wild, night before the final four, you can't even sleep now, yeah, we at the peak now, we can't even leap down, March Madness, man, we've been waiting weeks now. If you a Hawks fan, go ahead and hold them ones high. Shout out to the boosters showing love and the alumni. I'm speaking for the fans, even though I'm just one guy. We appreciate the love, love won't run dry. Imagine the state of Kansas with no Jayhawks. That's like having no streets but trying to jaywalk. They see us as support and we see them on the court. So we keep it loud and do our best so we don't come up short. We win together and we lose together. But win or lose, we still booze together. Struggles in my life will change me as a man. But one thing that'll never change, I'll be a Jayhawk fan.
I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it.